Must have been exciting for you and others working that when you were reading a message, you broke the code and knew what they were saying. That moment had to be...
Well, it was good for everybody in the laboratory. We had maybe about 100 workers there. And I know we had people who did it in the smaller FBI offices too, but the big office was in Washington, D.C. So if one happened, it was really a good thing. And we all patted them on the back and everybody was working at it, so we were part of it. A lot of codes were broken. And then once they were broken, we deciphered all of them. When Pearl Harbor happened, there was an FBI agent in Honolulu, and the head man there immediately called President Roosevelt, and he told him on the phone that very day what all was happening, all the ships that were hit and the Japanese coming in. He had direct contact that day of December the 7th.
They weren't saying they're coming in. They were telling which the president.
Which ships had been, bombed in Pearl Harbor.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But I really think our government more or less thought that that was going to happen. And so they were more alert so that when it did happen.
When you broke a code, what was the message? What were they saying?
Generally, the things that we did were more for safety of the United States. You know, that there were things that we had to be a little sharper about and protect them more. They were sending messages that we thought would be detrimental to our side.
And what would they say?
They might say they knew there was a ammunition place in such and such a place, and they were manufacturing certain ammunition things, because I'm sure they all knew what type of guns we had and rockets and tanks and everything.
So the Germans were sending that message that they knew ammunition could have been down here in McAllister.
It probably was, yes.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Then wherever we were building airplanes and tanks and whatever all, they probably knew about as soon as we knew what we were doing. And even now, it'd be faster with all this electronic stuff.
Was there any kind of use of computers back then at all?
The only one I know is when they broke that one that the submarine guy didn't destroy the code, because they had a computer that was the size of a house that they were able to do the code.
When you
the
see
Enigma
they,
code.
Who's that?
The British and the Americans.
The Enigma code?
The British had it, but they asked for Americans to help with the intelligence.
And they had a computer?
Yes, but it was the size of a 3-bedroom house. It was that big. Now it's that size.
We're thinking back in the 40s, maybe they didn't even think about computers, but they did.
No, they did have one, the beginning of it, let's say.
The messages you broke the code on, they were talking about ammunition points in the United States, those kinds of things they were talking about?
And of course, we read a lot of Spanish things. Some of those came from South American countries, and some were more acceptable to the Japanese or the Germans than we were. There were things that we saw that they were sending or writing letters back and forth. And we actually read a lot of people's personal letters, because the thing about codes is if you're going to do this, you and somebody have decided how you're going to do your code. So if it's going to be a written letter, they might write a letter, and after each dot, you'd write a sentence and put a dot, and maybe the next sentence, the third word would be one of the words. Then you'd keep reading, and after the next dot, well, it might be the fourth word. They had a plan that after each dot, so many words would be the message. But they would write what the message was going to be, like we fired on whatever it was, and this happened. They had to figure out how to put it together so it sounded like a good letter when they sent it to whoever they sent it to. Well, some of them didn't do a very good job, and you'd see, well, now that third word doesn't fit in with the rest of the sentence. So we read a lot of letters.
Personal letters.
Personal letters. Maybe they had a relative that was an officer in that country's armed service, see, and they would write to him.
Some were rather clumsy.
Yes.
And then some were pretty good.
Yes, the armed services ones were really a lot better. It's these ones that were written by people to other people. When you got to working with them, you could tell there was a cover-up, and so you just had to kind of figure out, well, now is it after this dot or this comma or whatever it is, you know, and read that. And lots of times people gave away some things because they might put their address on there and you knew where it was coming from, then you knew that person was sending information to somebody else if they put their address on it. They weren't real careful with some of the letters.
And in the world of codes, did you find the formulas kind of were the same? You just changed them around a little bit?
Well, you did sometimes, and each country has their own setup of how they want to send codes, especially with the armed services or the State Department or whatever. But now with all these computer things, they're a lot harder to break, I know.
For an example, there was a German officer who was sending knitting instructions.
Mm-hmm. We had a prisoner of war. He sent directions on to knit a sweater. It was knit one, purl three, that sort of a thing. The ones who worked on it, they said, well, I wonder if we really could make a sweater. So they figured out, well, no, when you got through with it, it was just a long string of letters, but it actually was a preconceived code, and they knew if he said purl three or knit five, whatever it was, then that was part of their code. But you couldn't make a sweater out of what he sent. It was more like a scarf that didn't even hold together, but it was not a sweater.